By the power of Grayskull.
And hello there, folks, and welcome to episode 75 of the Hot Toy Cast, the high-end action figure podcast for high-end humans, where we discuss all things high-end, from the likes of Hot Toys, Sideshow, Mondo, and many more. Emphasis on the Mondo there, because we have got some Mondo on the show today. But first, I'm joined by my regular co-host today, one Michael Crawford. How are you doing today, Mike?
I'm doing well.
Yay, we got you out of bed nice and early this morning, didn't we, Mike? Get you on. And today, as it's a bit of a special, and we're going to be focusing on my favorite brand a little bit, not much, but a little bit, Masters of the Universe, I decided we'd get on one Theodore Biaselli, big Netflix producer, but more importantly than being a big Netflix producer, he's an all-round Masters of the Universe nutcase. So we had to have him on, didn't we, Ted? We had to have you on.
It's been clinically diagnosed. I am, in fact, a Masters of the Universe nutcase.
Is it clinically, it's clinically diagnosed? And it is fair to point out that exactly this time last year, the last time we recorded this podcast, on the day I recorded a podcast, is the day I went to the hospital because my bicep took a vacation from my arm. And remember that? Sure. It's all grand now. Nice. It's all fine now, but that's what happened. And made me feel so much better that last podcast. And that was exactly 1 year ago, almost to the week that happened. And the bicep is back to normal now. But by gosh, that was a fun... That was a hell of a day. I was in hospital emergency room, and then the end of the day, I was with Pixel Dan and Ted, and we just had a hell of a blast the way it is. But enough about...
What ails you?
Exactly what ails you. But today, and more importantly, we have one Bob Fulkerson from Mondo, and we're delighted to have you on, Bob. How are you doing today, Bob?
I'm doing well. Thank you for having me on. Honored to be among such esteemed guests.
Yay.
Ted and, you know, Mike, you're starting to sound more and more like Beetlejuice every day.
I'm trying.
Don't say his name two times. Crawford.
He will appear and give you bad reviews.
Well, as we know, Mondo are absolutely bringing on the heat in a massive way with some of their latest reveals and stuff like that. Not only we are going to talk about Masters of the Universe today, as I mentioned, and what we're going to do is we're going to rattle through some questions, but I do want to talk about, you know, just Mondo on a whole and just the whole 1/6 as a whole. We will skim. And I'll be murdered if I don't ask about the Masters of the Universe 1/12 line. So we're just going to skim off it because this is a 1/12 podcast. Other podcasts are available for the smaller stuff. But we will give Bob a free-for-all here because it's a rare time we're going to have him on here. And we just want to talk about anything Bob really wants to talk about and promote. But first of all, I think for the sake of just keeping listeners and stuff happy, we'll just rattle through some general fan quizzes. So I posted on Facebook and Instagram and Twitter, and a bunch of people were good enough to come back and give us some questions. So, Ted, take it away with the first question there.
All right, I love it. I'm going to say that you guys actually owned Comic-Con. In terms of toy companies, I think Marvel, you know, they bring out Robert Downey Jr. just to, you know, to win an afternoon. But you guys really owned the buzz around Comic-Con. So I think that's like rock star, like totally killer. All right, so the first question is actually something that I was wondering too. I'm going to mod it a little bit. But would you guys ever consider selling like a booster pack with like additional head sculpts or weapons? Some kind of like the way Motu did, you know, the weapons rack with those kinds of things, or maybe just like an additional Lion-O head, something like that. Is that on in the cards?
Yeah, you know, it's a thing we've certainly kicked around the idea. Like all things, it may or may not fall under what we have for current licensing. You know, because the licensing is fairly
specific,
fairly defined, I guess is how I would frame it. But certainly, head packs, accessory packs, is something we and other items that could be adjacent to that is something we actively discuss all the time. It's really determining whether or not there's demand, how you price it.
There is demand. I will say, you know, it's tough at the 1/6 scale to find like diorama pieces that actually sort of, you know, apply to these these figures. Build an environment. That's where I was kind of like, oh man, the weapon pack would be great with that rack, or even the weapons rack that didn't come with Castle Grayskull that came as the cardboard one. Little things like that.
The triangular one.
Yeah.
This is something we're definitely interested in pursuing. I can't say we're going to get to it or we're going to do it, but there are a few things, and I can't tell you what they are, that are coming out that I think people will be pleasantly surprised with.
Well, good. Thanks. I delightful in being pleasant and surprised.
we gotta be mysterious.
Well, no one saw Scaremare coming. I mean, that was just completely out of left field, wasn't it?
Well, absolutely. It was completely out of left field because it didn't exist until we created it.
That's really cool.
So that was actually fairly,
there you go. Mike,
you know, it feels a bit like done the impossible. So.
Exactly. Cool. Mike, do you want to take the next question?
Sure, I'll take the next one. Of course, it's this nice short.
I give it the shortest one.
We've got to work on Eamon and his question structure here. But the question is pretty simple. Are we getting Zodak?
Are we getting Zodak? Potentially. You know, there's a lot. We get a lot of demand for a lot of characters in this line. Mm. And it's not an easy seat to sit in to decide what couldn't be made, what will actually resonate with the customers. As everyone on this call knows, Zodak is a combination of a couple parts from other characters as well. Mm-hmm. So maybe the answer is no.
You got to knock off that eight back, Bob. You got to get that classic eight back out. Mm. Come on. Last one, hold out.
Like, I remember when they first released classics way back in 2006. And I first saw the first few figures, and Zodak was one of them. I tell you, he was my favorite. I was blown away by the classics of Zodak. I just think he's just a funky Kirby-esque design. I just think he's a real just cool character kind of thing. But
we're real close to getting that initial impact done.
Yeah.
But you know, there's characters where we've teased for a long time, like Stratos, that still hasn't come to the world.
Cool. All right, we better rapidly get through these actually, because we're going. All right, we're going to get a flock panther. This flocking panther that we saw at the PowerCon, which looked so lovely. It looks so lovely. Wow, is that still?
Okay, panther. Wow, this is a tough subject. So, as many advances as we've made in technology, we still don't have flying cars, and flocking has not changed from 40 years ago.
Yeah.
So one of the problems with Flock Panther is
the joints.
You know, is the joints that it's articulated, which causes rubbing with the flocking, and that causes all kinds of customer service issues, which I don't really want to deal with.
No.
Additionally, one of the challenges we're facing is there's been you folks across the pond over there have passed some new laws about microplastics, which basically bans flocking in Europe.
Oh, although that might be the one good thing we got out of Brexit, because we're not part of Europe anymore. So we in the UK might still be able to get that. That might be the only good thing that came out of Brexit, that we might be able to get the Flock Panther. Way success.
So is Flock Panther off the table? No, but Flock Panther requires a lot more work, and I don't know if Flock Panther is ever actually going to see that.
Plus as well, I guess, and you got to figure out as well, it's actually going to be worth all the palaver as well. I mean, that is a hell of an undertaking to take on a flock thing. And like you said, so many things can go wrong in it. So it's, you know, I think people got to manage their expectations a little bit sometimes. That, you know, there's a huge risk in making something that big. I mean, we got a 1/6 scale Panther and Battlecat already. Panther is lovely.
Yeah, the short answer is we all owned. If we were Motu kids or had friends that were Motu kids, a Flock Panther, mm-hmm. we know what happened. That's not going to change.
It's not.
So and that's a pretty hard sell to someone.
Exactly.
At that price point, in my opinion.
And of course, he would probably be more expensive again, given the flocking as well, wouldn't he?
Yeah.
So
yeah, that's probably way too honest of an answer.
Yeah, right. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, exactly. Okay. Mike. Oh, no, Ted. Sorry, Ted. Next question. Question five.
Well, we revel in honesty, so thank you.
You're welcome, Ted.
So, you know, I'm as much as I am a classic toy nerd, I also do love me my Filmation. And we got that cool Revelation style Skeletor.
Oh, I love that.
Chance for some Filmation style characters. I mean, I love the Trapjaw in Filmation colors. That's my Trapjaw on display, even though I have all of the Trapjaws. That's the one that I keep up. Any ones that actually look in the style, not just the design, but the actual style of Filmation.
Probably not. It's just not what we're doing. You know, we like to do nods to it, but a direct take on Filmation, one, is most likely a different license than what we have.
Got it.
And two, it's kind of not what we're
Like, I love the Revelations Guildhorse. I actually think it's my... I know... I love all the Mondos, but I gotta tell you, I think my Revelations Guildhorse is my favorite one in the cubicle right now. And I've got all of them, dude. I've got all of them. They're here. I've got two lovely cubicles here in my office.
I need to be clear with everyone, that is a separate line from our main Mochi line.
Yeah, So technically I should have him in a different display, I guess. I should have this Skeletor. Yep. But will he have a He-Man to go with him soon, I wonder? That's you know, I'd love a He-Man to go with him.
We have talked about it. It's going to depend on, you know, market trends and everything else, and whether or not, you know, Ted gets a season 3.
Oh.
Ted!
All right.
Turning the tables, Ted. Sorry.
You can't see it, but I'm having a cup of coffee. Thank you.
I'm drinking water.
Mike, question number 5, please.
Yeah. So Mondo said that they're hesitant to remake figures like Merman and Man-at-Arms because the first runs were so good. And I will say Merman has a fantastic figure. Yeah. I mean, that really was a great kickoff. Oh, I've still got him on my shelf. I did manage to break his hip last week being an idiot. But that was my fault. I was just being stupid. And I was able to fix him good enough so that he's still out there on the shelf. He's good. A beautiful figure. Have you considered just re-releasing the original versions of those two for those getting into the line? Or are you hesitant to incur the wrath of those collectors who might flip out over that?
Not really hesitant to incur the wrath. Those figures were a long time ago. The Merman, though, is actually pretty as close to perfect as I think we're going to get it.
Yep.
We have talked about redoing Man-at-Arms. Whether we'll get to either one of those is still to be determined. You know, especially a Man-at-Arms is being such a core character. Mm. It's kind of difficult to get new collectors into the line if they can't get their hands on it. Mm-hmm. And the same could be said for Merman, but he's not. Right.
Yeah, no, I love Man-at-Arms, but I always felt there's some of the proportions of Man-at-Arms are just a little. Just a little fun, but I love his design. I love the kind of the bulky armor and the shoulder pads and stuff like that. But I mean, I wouldn't say no to a new Man-at-Arms. That's not me criticizing the previous one, but I wouldn't say no to one either. But you know, I love the one we have, a little orc in a jar as well. That comes in. Right. So the next question for me is: as we know, Swiftwind is coming. Do we know Swiftwind is coming at some point? That was very assumptuous of someone to say. But are there any other any other plans? Well, I guess we've seen a horse buck now, so maybe people are just putting two and two together. You know how people phrase questions? It's kind of like, aha, if they don't address this, I'll catch them out. That feels like that's what this question is. So, but are we, is there any plans for She-Ra's 20th anniversary or 40th anniversary rather? Any?
I mean, I can't really elaborate on it, but, you know, obviously there's a big anniversary coming up.
Cool.
We have the license. We'd kind of be stupid not to do something. Right?
Can you hear that dog barking out there? That's Toffee. That's the look. Can you hear the dog barking now? Is there a dog barking?
No, I hear no dog.
Okay, good. Shut up, Toffee. Right, okay.
Now you just saw a meme.
We're Toffee.
Ted, as a mean Irishman now. That's all you are.
Actually, Ted, you've kind of already asked that question. So, Ted, feel free to jump on to number 8 there. Then
I'm gonna glom on to the She-Ra question right now, because I feel like if we get Swiftwind, which is, you know, has not been confirmed, usually what you guys do when we release a Battlecat or a Panther, there's like an enhanced version of He-Man and Skeletor. So it'd be a nice time to do an enhanced She-Ra. But any chance for a lovely Princess Adora or Force Captain Adora as well? She'd look great with Prince Adam.
She would.
There's a few characters that we think are interesting within the She-Ra universe that we'll touch on. So, and I'll leave it up. I'll leave it at that.
There you go. Mike, number 9.
Sure. So, Scaremare obviously is an awesome addition to the line. We've already talked about it. It's an awesome addition to the line and to the lore of Masters of the Universe. So,
hi.
Do you guys have any other original ideas brewing? I know you're going to. I already know the answer to this question, but I'm asking it.
The answer to the question is, of course we do. I don't know if we're going to have the ability to pull them off the way we did with Scaremare. Scaremare serves a pretty it was an interesting experiment in whether we could do something, whether we could create a character within the universe, and whether Mattel would,
right,
which they've been amazing partners, and you know, the process of going through that was great. And then we also worked with Dark Horse to create the mini comic. It's such a strange experience to have created a character from a, you know,
and where did he come?
An institution from your childhood, I guess.
What was the inception of Scaremare there? Actually, how did that conversation come about?
The inception of Scaremare is we were sitting around and talking about, you know, what the, you know, a little bit about alternative characters we could create, and we were talking about, you know, again, if you haven't picked up on it, we're big Scareglow fans.
Yeah, I've got all three. I've got two here.
and you know, it was just like, you know, Scareglow leans in so heavily into a Four Horsemen of the Apocalypse or Death kind of character, and it was like, you know, well, does Scareglow have a steed? And it's like, well, what if he had a big scary flying Death Horse leaning into the full Four Horsemen of the Apocalypse with wings? I'm a big fan of characters with wings. Mm-hmm. You know, I gave a pretty good review on our Man Bat, which is a product I basically demanded we make. Mm-hmm. for the Batman the Animated Series line, and I'm still disappointed because I wanted the wingspan to be 3 inches longer or wider than it is now, which is pretty stupid, to be fair.
Really?
Well, I don't know if you've seen Man Bat even or not. But,
Mike's, you know, got him.
Mike had to hang him from the ceiling because he had nowhere else.
Yeah, I hung him from the ceiling, and right. And the beauty is the wingspan, so the aisles between my shelving is 3 feet. And the wingspan fits perfectly from one shelf to the other across.
Thank
the
you for making the argument for my team. I think it's 32 inches, and I wanted it to be 36. So they win yet again. Curses. So yeah, it was just one of those moments where we were sitting around as a crew brainstorming what we should make, and you know, we came up with the idea. We pitched it to Mattel, and Mattel said yes. And then we're like, well, how do we get it canonized? And it was like, we do this, and here we are. And now, you know, me and Hector have created a canonized character within Masters of the Universe, feels really awesome.
Yeah, no, it's seriously cool. It's, again, like, you know, few get to add to Masters of the Universe like that. It's absolutely stunning. That like you said, it is a great idea to kind of have a Scareglow as that kind of character. But yeah, it is version 3, and I have to say this version does look really good. I mean, I love the second one because, you know, he's got that kind of really kind of retro kind of vibes to him and stuff like that, but this new one, he's sexy. He's very, very sexy.
So someone online asked a question about whether we would do the one from the Netflix series, and I was like, well, I think the second one
is actually it is.
Ted can confirm this. It's like it'd be so meta to do that.
100% is. When we were designing Scareglow for Revelation, there was a couple versions, and you could see them in the Art of book, that were a little different. And I remember sending pics of the Mondo figure of Scareglow to the designers, and I said, do this. This is our Scareglow. So it's kind of there. You got them.
Yeah, exactly. But the new one, though, it's got like a quite like, I don't want to say Attack on Titan, but it's kind of like Attack on Titan, where like the bones are kind of on the outside, and I just love all that. I think that's, how did you land on that there? How in design wise?
That was driven by Hector, and he really wanted him to have, you know, more of a musculature and an actual skeleton, other than, you know, in the past, Scareglow's kind of a tempo.
Mm.
You know, and a bit of that spun out of, you know, we initially were trying to, like, how can you do, like, the glowing bones inside the body, which is how the large soft vinyl actually came out of that idea, right? And we couldn't ever figure out how to do that in any economical way in 1/6 and still have it articulate. Mm-hmm. and all of that. So this was kind of a midway point of, you know, sculpting the skeleton and then having essentially what looks like muscle striations in and amongst the bones. I think it looks amazing.
It does. I mean, it is mind-blowing. It's mind-blowing.
It's certainly more terrifying, I think, than the other ones.
It's gonna.
I just love the cape. I think that the ornateness to the cape and the collar and the like, those long things hanging in front, very reminiscent of the Skeletor in the movie design. Like, I love that whole look to it. I think it looks amazing.
Yeah, and all of that has wires, so you can pose it, Ted, and any even the tassels that hang in the front, so you can pose it in pretty dynamic poses as well.
I'm so excited. And I'm excited because I got the bundle, so I get the flaming head and the flames go on my weapons, because that's going to be...
And the poster!
And it comes with a mini comic.
And a mini comic. It's a really good value. I mean, I sound like Billy Blaze here, but wait, there's more.
Well, the window that closed now yesterday and things like that, no, but will there be another opportunity for anyone to get that, or what's happening there? Is that it?
It's a timed edition. Once it's done.
Yeah.
We're just going to move on.
Yeah, cool. Obviously, because Rogue, you had another version of Rogue that went up yesterday, so I dropped on that one very quickly because I missed out on the first one, of course, and I had to get on that. But it was tough trying to figure out the Scaremare as well with that. So there's so much good stuff coming on because you got that lovely big thick Juggernaut, you got flipping Omega Red that looks so cool, and who doesn't love Omega Red? But my goodness, that Rogue is just stunning, and I cannot wait to get it. I'm still obviously waiting for my Teela to come, but she's on the boat now. So Teela hopefully should be coming soon. I missed out on Orko, sadly. But yeah, no,
you missed the best figure ever.
I know, but you know, I'll try and get him later if I can, kind of thing. You know, I was in the middle of moving house and everything. I'm still trying to say. But yeah, really exciting stuff. Bro, but while we're on the mini comic question, Ted, you want to ask that? We got two final questions, so let's just rattle through them. Ted, you want to ask that last question there? Second last question.
Super easy. Yeah. Are there any other figures that could come with mini comics?
There you go.
Potentially. I mean, it's not off the table, but as you know, Ted, there's a lot of work that goes into creating a story.
For sure.
So we would have to see some kind of, you know, motivating factor for why. And I'm kind of crazy. I don't like when... Like, so now that we have mini comics, I'm the kind of crazy guy that'd be like, well, all of the others should have came with mini comics. Because I'm a bit of a completist. Mike would know this me from back in the day. And so that doesn't, I'm sounding really crazy, but I'm kind of crazy on this. So it's hard for me to say, yes, there'll be more mini comics without being able to invent a time machine and there always being mini comics.
Yes,
well, because it is such a throwback. You know, as silly as it sounds, I'm sitting next to almost a full set of mini comics right now, which I inherited from my lovely mother-in-law, who kept all of her boys' toys in good shape.
Nice. So, well, the thing is, I think Scaremare warrants the mini comic because you want to give them that origin story, which is what the mini comics serve. That kind of what those kind of purpose of the mini comics. They showed you the character and the adventure to give you the idea of what the character is about. So. No doubt, yeah, this mini comic is focused on.
I appreciate you seeing the logic loophole in my brain.
Yeah,
of why yeah, Scaremare yeah. got it. Why Scaremare got a mini comic?
Yeah, and Bob is, you got to understand, in the back of Bob's brain, this is constantly itching.
Yes, 100%, Mike.
Yeah,
Mike, you get the last question.
Oh, do I?
You do.
Okay, so I'm going to read this exactly the way Eamon wrote it, because it's just such a fine piece of journalism.
Mike, it's what I said. I got a degree in it.
Cartoon Thundercats?
There you go. Beautiful.
Maybe. I'm not opposed to it. Which cartoon?
Ah, there's a good question. You see, listener, the person who posted that question, you didn't think of that, did you? You didn't. Yeah, let's go for 2005 Thundercats then, or whatever year it was. Yeah, let's do that.
Oh, Thundercats roar, man. Get on that.
Which I think
I'm quite pleased myself with that answer.
People really misread that cartoon for what it was meant to be at all. They kind of misread it wrong. But there you go.
Fans jumped to conclusions and made their determination about whether they liked it or not from one image?
I know, Ted. I know. It's a very strange phenomenon. Really,
when has that ever happened?
I know, it just it never happens. It's a very strange phenomenon. Looking to find collectible figures at low cost with superior customer service? Fanboy Collectibles is one of the largest retailers of high-end collectibles on the east coast of the USA. carrying a full array of hot toys, Enterbase, Sideshow, Collectibles, 3A, and all the top manufacturers. The Mexican International package is shipped daily, all fully insured with tracking number and securely packed. Getting it to you as quickly is important, but not as important as your collectibles arriving in pristine condition. Are you looking to pre-order an item to guarantee you don't miss it when it's released? Well, Fanboy Collectibles does that too. If you got a question about an item, give them a call, shoot them an email, or even leave them a message on their Facebook page. Fanboy Collectibles is available full-time to respond to you and to get your items to you as quickly as possible. Anyone can make a sale. Fanboy Collectibles knows the key to being successful is repeat customers. That comes from doing the right thing by you and making customer services their priority. Fanboy Collectibles. For some it's a hobby, to them it's an obsession. There you go. We rattled through the questions there now, so that's absolutely amazing. We got all through. That only took us 25 minutes, but there you go. But now we got a free for all. So I mean, aside from Master Universe now, Rob, Jesus Christ, see, Mike said Rob earlier on today, and I'm stuck on that now.
My grand, my uncles.
I love how I went from Rob to Bob straight to our Lord and Savior.
Actually, I said Rob. I was being tremendously, proper. I said Robert.
Man, okay, Robert.
Yes, to which I told him, only tax collectors call me that.
But Bob, we've got other things now coming. Now we've got The Thing. We've got Nada from They Live, and we got Megan. Tell us about Nada from They Live, because he's due to drop any moment now, isn't he, Nada?
Yeah, Nada's coming up real soon. What Mondo's been doing in 1/6 isn't what traditional 1/6 is, really.
No, which is a good thing.
They're separate animals, and that's intentional. But I'm a huge fan of 1/6. Been a 1/6 collector for a number of years. And the characters like Nada, they're just not real likely to get a lot of love from another company.
Mm.
So we figured, why not? Huge fan of that movie. I like a lot of the not hidden subtext of that movie, of what that movie's about.
Yeah.
Really in your face. And being a huge fan of wrestling when I was a kid growing up too, why not take a run at a Roddy Piper character? If I could have done Hell Comes to Frogtown, I would have done that.
God. I've never seen that film, actually.
Oh, Eamon, get on it. It was a staple of home video rental stores around the United States.
Really? Okay. I do want to, because it's obviously not going to be as good as They Live, surely.
No, not even in the same way.
But if I like Roddy Piper's a performance in They Live, I'm going to like it.
Sure.
And I guess. It's hard for me to judge that movie because of how that movie is ingrained in my childhood.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's very much like a trauma film.
Right, okay.
Kind of thing.
See, certain movies like that didn't make it over to Ireland, for some other reason. But yeah, like none of the trauma movies made it over to Ireland, sadly, growing up. Although I did see Toxic Avenger, maybe because it had things in it. But well, yeah, that's lovely. I can. How was the soft goods on that? Sorry?
You didn't see Sergeant Kabuki Man?
Nope.
Oh, man. You missed out, dude.
I know. Certain American release just didn't make it over there and stuff like that. But
I've noticed Mr. Crawford is awfully silent on Hell Comes to Frogtown. You must not be your face.
Yeah. I mean, but They Live is such a cult classic. It's got one of the best screen fights still of all time. It's still got one of the best fights. And I love Roddy Piper's performance in that. I like, it's just, this is first time acting. It was like, come, what a brave move by John Carpenter.
Compared to some of what we see now coming out of, some wrestlers
who
have done it being 4 and 5 times and still can't manage, a performance quite that good. So he did a nice job, and it is a classic movie. I love that. I love, again, like Bob said, in your face. Carpenter just, it's one of his better films. It's not a Halloween or a thing, but it's pretty damn close.
It's very good. It's absolutely brilliant. Absolutely love that movie. And of course, we got the Thing as well. We got
John Carpenter. I can't help but notice, that there's a Carpenter theme here, Bob, right? There's
Well, there's that itch in the back of my head, Mike.
Yeah.
Once I start down a road or something, and that's not just me, but I'd like thematic. I like the conversation I get to have with fans through product, through either an obvious theme or a not quite so obvious theme, right?
Yeah.
How did you?
So yes, they're definitely a fan of Carter.
How did you get along with the soft goods now on these two figures now? Because obviously, you know, you've tampered with the soft goods and some of the master stuff with the furry long clots and the furry boot trims and just small little bits, a couple of cases. But how going into the arena of fully, you know, fully tooled, not tooled, but obviously fully fabricated shirts and boots and shoelaces and belts and all this stuff, how did you find that game?
Yeah, not my first... with Mondo, it's the first time.
Yeah.
Outside of the Hitchcock figure, but the Hitchcock figure was done before my time. Not my first foray into 1/6. I worked really closely with the two principals over at X06 at a previous company where we did this kind of product in the past. Cut and sew is tough because on the Motu line, since it's somewhat our creation, there is a, this is in everyone's head, this is what it should look like, right? Or, but you can get away with variances in anything accurate 1/6. It's a really tough game.
But like that,
because everybody knows what a flannel shirt is supposed to look like and the proportions of a flannel shirt and the buttons of a flannel shirt. The same thing with the human face. The human face is always very difficult in comparison to doing a monster or a character like Beast Man. Because we're just so trained to pick up things that are wrong.
You guys went nuts on Beastman, I'll tell you. He's huge!
Yeah, you can. I'll take some credit for I'm always making bigger. Like characters like Beastman should be huge and imposing and really quite out of scale with the rest of the characters in terms of their size.
Yeah, Bob and I have talked about that before, and we've said that before on our other podcast, Damon, when, you know, human likeness, the problem is the prettier the person, the harder it is for a sculptor to key in on something that's going to be able to make them create a recognizable portrait. So when you get really pretty people, the fact is they tend to look a lot alike. You know, there's not as many distinctive features. And so, you know, I can imagine that doing Kurt Russell outside of that cool hair that he had in the thing and beard, you know, that helped. But yeah, doing a character like Kurt Russell, it gets harder. That's why they've had so many trouble, you know, much trouble with Harrison Ford over the years or William Shatner as Kirk. It's hard to do pretty people. Now, you do somebody who's got a scar or their age, or they're, you know, they've got a big nose, or it gets a little easier to capture something that's recognizable.
Imperfection is key.
I also think it's difficult to do those actors who've been around forever.
Yeah.
Because you've got this kind of mashup of what they look like in your head versus what they look like in that specific film.
Especially if they've transcended, you know, through the years. I mean, Hasbro still hasn't given us a great Mark Hamill figure in any of their Star Wars lines. One that actually looks like Mark Hamill. It's crazy. It's tough. It's why it's so hard to get He-Man right. Just a normal, good-looking man who just doesn't look like an oaf or brutish or like
Conan.
It's really tough. Yeah, or Conan looking just like a blonde Conan. It's really, really tough.
Yeah. Imperfection is key with likeness and all these things. I find it's like, you know, you see it in Hot Toys too. You know, they're always while they do look like the characters, there's always a slightly more idealized version. Because I think, just being as a 2D artist myself, you don't instinctively want to draw something that's ugly or imperfect. You want to keep everything balanced. It's just, and with sculptors, it's going to be that's that kind of inclination to want to keep things as good as possible is just going to come right to the foreground. So it's kind of, you kind of have to do the thing perfect and then work backwards and add the imperfections. That's often is the case anyway, especially when I'm trying to get likenesses myself and to like the Game of Thrones stuff or anything like that. You know, I do try to lock in and it's like, oh my god, but it looks really bad if I put that kink in her face or I move that eye off a little bit. It's just gonna look bad. But it's like, but no, that gives her the character. But sometimes that works on a person that's moving and is moving around and all the animation is there. But on a 2D object that you rotate on, it can often look a little jarring. So it's hard stuff, likenesses, I think. You know, it's a fine line.
Yeah, that same problem actually applies to props. you know, when it comes to creating prop replicas, because if you actually created a true prop replica, everybody would be like, what is this piece of junk? What are all these uneven bits and bobs that make
sense? Remember when you guys did the two Firefly the guns?
Yeah, over at Quantum, yes.
Yeah, you did the one that was the...
one that was accurate with the slightly bent barrel?
Yeah, and it was like the one right, you know, it was the lightweight version. It was the stunt prop that they would have actually used. And then later you had to make the one that was, you know, the heavyweight.
Really? People would thought about that bent barrel? That's
well, it was just, I mean, we cast it, right? It was, that one was cast off of one of the originals, and the barrel was slightly offset because it was just set in with, like, you know, hex head screws, right? Because it was built over some actual real gun. And, you know, the barrel was slightly, and everybody liked the barrel slightly. Like, we know, that's what the prop looks like. Right? So, you know, it's like you have to correct the imperfection in the prop.
Yeah. Okay, the next one. Ted, do you want to ask about Megan?
Yes, because I'm an absolute horror fanatic. And Megan, is this your first dab into, like, rooted hair and that sort of avenue of 1/6?
Absolutely, and we're super. I don't know of anybody that got to go to Comic-Con. I believe we had Megan on display at Comic-Con. I knew we had Megan on display at Comic-Con, and that's an actual production scene.
Oh right! Oh brilliant! Oh cool!
Oh my God! She looks so good, Bob.
You know, we put. There's just so much work that goes into this, guys, that I think people don't see, and we put a tremendous amount of effort into making that Megan and doing the rooted hair and, you know, the debate on whether or not she should have, you know, her eyes should move because she's real, you know, such a creepy robot, really. And, you know, we're really proud. I'm really proud of what the team was able to put together with that. I can't take any real credit for any of that work beyond, you know, we're going to make Megan. That was my role in that whole.
Talk about how you came up with that, because I mean, it's not the most obvious of character selections. Look, I was there day one seeing Megan in the theaters. I was part of that early, you
great
know,
movie. Such a good movie.
Now, I mean, come on, you have a crazy homicidal robot life size doll. The gays are going to be there as one who dances down. we're there, but. I was so delighted to see that you took a stab on that license. And it's like, how did you guys come to that? What was the deciding factor?
The deciding factor was we liked the film.
There you go.
We liked the film. And it was really, you know, I'm a huge fan of the horror genre. So much of that genre is covered. Yeah. So, you know, I'll just be honest. It felt like an opportunity to do something that, like I was saying with Nada, that someone else is going to overlook, but there's a fan base there that will want this product. And
I agree.
You know, it's a bit of a roll of a dice, but you know, you got to do that. That's what you got to do when you're trying to make products and have that resonate with a certain, you know, type of customer you align with, I guess, is really the answer. I'm kind of fumbling there, but I like having a conversation with the customers to product.
Exactly.
That's yeah. And I felt like we had something to say and something to contribute to that fandom. And I think she's one of the most interesting horror characters to come out in the past.
Oh, absolutely. No, she really, really, really is different. She was a breath of fresh air, to be honest. You think this movie is, sometimes horror movies, just they just fall into a formula, blah, 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 but it surprised me, this movie. Megan, I think that's why people quite gravitated towards Megan, because it was just, while it was familiar, it was still felt a little bit new and fresh, I think. And that's what I got from it anyway. Mike, did you want to talk about some of those reveals we saw at San Diego?
You know, we saw some great reveals. How about we talk about something, you know, these guys are going on about how great San Diego was. I don't remember seeing any animated series reveals. Did I miss something?
Batman the animated series?
Yeah.
You totally missed something. You missed Clayface.
I did. Oh, you're right. Clayface, Batman Beyond.
We not Batman the animated series, but we did announce Terry and the Scarecrow, I believe.
Ah, yes, the Scarecrow. They did look good. All right, shut up, Michael.
No, it's fine. Clayface, I could understand why you miss him. He's, just
didn't we talk about Clayface before the show, though? We may have talked about that, and I may have just not realized that.
I think we might have talked about on another episode.
I believe we even might have showed off. Did we show off Ivy?
Yes, you did. I think you showed off Ivy.
I'm on Toy Arc at the moment trying to find pictures of the actual Mondo panel.
Yeah.
I should have had
that. Comic-Con becomes a blur. I feel so
he's
going to
be huge, right? I mean, this Clayface
look huge. Clayface is gigantic, absolutely. Because what else would he be? I mean, unfortunately, again, like that little dig in the back of my head. I wanted to make Clayface years ago a Build-A-Figure where every figure we had came with some Clayface accessory that would fit on the figure. So like your Batman would have had a Clayface arm. And then eventually when you're all done collecting the series, you were able to build a Clayface.
I assume you guys are going to do timed events on these two?
Most likely, but that's still too much.
But of course,
Clayface would be ideal for that because you could throw in some really cool extras.
Yeah, that's a great line, the Batman line, isn't it? It's room, isn't it? Where do you? I mean, I'd be collecting all of the X-Men, and I'd be collecting all of the Batman line if I had the room. But it's just you gotta.
Well, I will admit that I had been a completist.
Yeah.
On this line.
Oh yeah.
Up until those damn black and white exclusives. Those three, I had to go and say, it's killing me, but I just don't have any place to put three that are exactly the same, except they're in black and white.
I mean, that
you
gets
me, Mike.
I couldn't do it.
And of course,
to follow on to that, what about, we have a new 40s noir style Batman cartoon, Cape Crusader. Any chance we might see something coming out?
No comment.
No
comment.
That's a comment.
That's I heard.
Not a no. I've said all I'm allowed to say. I mean, I would love to, but
Well, at least a Batman, right? That's a really cool Batman. A lot of people are trying to kitbash one with that particular cowl and that particular costume and other scales. And so, yeah, I could imagine at least a Batman. But there's some excellent opportunities there. I think a Two-Face would really, really, really look good. And,
yeah, we can. I could throw a question out to the dais here and see what you guys think. I've been told by a few people nobody cares about old man Bruce from Batman Beyond. Are they right?
That nobody cares?
Nobody cares? What?
They're smoking crack, man. I don't know what you're talking about.
I mean, you do Bruce in the chair with Ace? He's a guy in the chair. You need the guy in the chair.
Yeah.
What?
And how do you all feel about Alfred? For me, Alfred is like the one core character that in almost all Batman lore exists. Like Alfred's like the through thread for me.
And there's not an Alfred that they made that I didn't buy, so...
Yeah. Same, by the way, same. I buy every Alfred figure that comes out, and I'm really, really sick that I did not get the tumbler with the Alfred figure. Or no, the Alfred figure that I did. That's right. The Alfred, he's not out yet. The Michael Goff Alfred that's coming with the Batman McFarlane. I was like, oh man. But I think if you do Alfred, you got to do Bruce Wayne. You got to do Dick. It's a slippery slope.
Yep.
But Alfred is a good cornerstone, and he would look great in there. But I think what you need to do with Alfred is obviously give him something that would be would incentivize him. You know, give him something else, a couple of other things, maybe a part of a control panel, a bit of a diorama or something like that, or the chair that Batman sits on or something like that. And you could add a little, something like that. But I tell you what, I'm after stumbling on here because I've just gone to the
ka-ching, ka-ching, ka-ching,
ka-ching. But I do, and plus another thing, that but the animated Alfred's got such a specific look, and he's such a tall, slim figure. You give him lots of food, you get lots of little stuff to serve on things like that. But I think maybe a little Batman control panel or something. Have you done a bat signal yet?
No, we've not.
See, they just add something to Alfred, and people will buy it. That's so good. Because like I'm running into the same situation now with like the Fire and Ice stuff. I want to do Juliana, but I'm like, will Juliana sell? She's such a character, so I'm trying to figure out, can we incentivize and put something with Juliana to make it more appealing? Because it's always, while there are completists out there are obviously people who are not completists, and so yeah. These
blaspheme.
Crazy people. I know. It's just, it seems wrong.
I think if you did Alfred and you include the chair And then at the you do a rerun of Batman, you know, with a Bruce Wayne head. I think right there is a diorama for people who may not have gone into the line, and then there's your gateway drug right there. Mm. That's it. Like you get them in on Batman, you know, sitting down in the chair with Alfred, maybe even holding the cowl, the limp cowl.
Yeah.
That shot Batman Mask of the Phantasm when he hands Bruce the cowl and he gasps. I love that scene so much. It's like it's the most iconic moment of Batman putting on the mask the first time, and you don't see it. Like you only see Alfred's reaction to it. It is masterpiece, right? They've never recreated something like that in any of the live action Batman films, and it's so good. But like that moment is such a beautiful little like diorama for your shelf of Batman in the chair or Alfred standing there giving him the cowl. Like, oh yeah, baby.
I will say, gentlemen, it is nice to be amongst my own ilk in my in their love for Alfred. And now he's actually the hero of the universe.
Well, Bob, don't listen to these guys whatsoever. Absolutely doing Alfred. I don't care what you put with it. I will buy it. Clearly, you book. Have seen my collection. I am clearly the average collector.
Yes, yes, yes. Yes. Everybody builds a museum to their obsession.
That's right.
Well, I'm going on the Mondo website here. Just looking. I mean, honestly, God, there was just so many things I would like. I'd have that German. Oh, that Kong. I love that. Oh my God, this Man Thing. I missed out on Man. That Man Thing. I loved that Man Thing. I've never even read a Man Thing. But I just love, you know, Hector's just putting out these lovely vinyls. And I know Hector's your big vinyl guy, isn't he, Bobby? And he's putting out these vinyls. I'm not into vinyls. I'm just, they're not usually appeal to me. But my God, these ones you guys are making are like, they're so hard to resist. Like, I love the Juggernaut one, but I specifically loved the Kong and I loved the Man Thing. That stuff was just amazing. But my thingy here was my point here was, is like, I've just come across, you've just teased that Lion-O is getting ready to be launched for pre-order, Thundercats Lion-O. And what's great about this, again, like all Mondo figures, it's kind of your own take and your own sort of spin on the character. Mm-hmm. And we have seen redesigns of Lion-O before. Obviously we had the newer series, but forget that, I'm on about redesigns of the 80s Lion-O. And to be honest, I have never really felt that a lot of people have nailed it. There was a Sideshow one that I didn't quite like. They gave him shorts. I was like, what are you doing? Don't stop it. Don't give him shorts. Just lean into whatever he's had, but make it better. And I think what you guys, just from the pictures from San Diego Comic-Con of this Lion-O that you guys have, he's looking glorious. I absolutely love it. I think the faces that you're giving him, you're giving him a lion face. You're giving him a kind of a screaming face. Do his eyes... I don't know if you, bearing in mind I'm going to ask you a question that you might not be able to answer, will his eyes light up? Are you going to do the ring thing in the back? What's going on there? Questions?
No, the eyes don't light up as far as I know, and I would know.
It's just that they're quite luminescent in this teaser pick.
You touched on something on how a lot of the credit for our style really goes down to Hector, and we do a massive amount of research. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I will obsessively read the fan groups to see what they say.
Oh, that's a blessing and a curse, isn't it, doing that?
And about what they say. And you learn from what other people that have taken run on it got wrong and what they got right. Mm. And you try and translate that into the product. That's also why we do things like where there's two or three different looks, is we're trying to appeal to... It's very much, if Mike likes this certain look, I would like to give Mike what he likes. If Ted likes this look, I would like to give Ted what he looks like. The look of, but trying to mesh that together so it doesn't seem completely disjointed within the figure.
Well, I think the design here is a real, like I think you've kind of nailed the design here a little bit, to be honest. I always feel that giving kind of skirts and things that are always an easy get-out card. I always feel that something a little bit more inventive should be kind of, you know, designing figures. Like, you always want to give them those, it seems like a very modern thing to do, to give them these kinds of side pauldron, hip pauldrons, and then the kind of the front kind of pauldron. But on this, on Lion-O, I think it really, really works. I'm not usually a fan of side pauldrons on a figure, because I just, like I said, I think it's overdone. But on Lion-O, this figure looks great to me, and it's like, oh God, where am I going to put him? Where am I? Because I have to get him. I absolutely have to get him. But it's like, where am I going to put him? But he comes with a snarf with a great big old grin in his face. He's very Cheshire Cat, isn't he? All snarf. And
well, you know, when I was young, Snarf actually kind of creeped me out a bit. and he, so
he's
and
a
I'm not, and I never told anybody that, wow. But especially the way he was lit at Comic-Con, he's lit from below. He looks completely sinister.
He does look a bit Cheshire Catty, yeah. But I love Lino's face sculpt, and you've given him a King Lino, and you've given him some sort of, cause I can't really remember the cartoon that well, but is that a chain that comes from the glove, the bear, the lion claw thing, his claw shield?
Yeah, you know, the Lino's a tough character because he has very masculine facial features but extremely feminine hair.
I know the feeling.
Yes, I used to have long hair as well, but it wasn't, you know, certainly not the luscious locks that you had. But, you know, there was a couple where I'm like, this is like two 1960s starlet hair. We have to dial this back a bit because it's and his hair is so prominent in all of the different iterations of Lion Hope.
I'd love to see the notes. Less Farah, more Bon Jovi. I'd love to see, you know, the actual notes on the model sheets.
Well, unfortunately, my notes aren't usually that eloquent. They really are like, yeah, that looks like a pinup from the 60s hair. If that's what we're going for, great.
Were there any particular challenges you felt with what? Challenge-wise, or were there any challenges between Thundercats and Masters Universe? Was there an approach? And like, obviously, the fur on the body was discussed, you know, because that can go really wrong if you don't do it right. We, you know, I haven't seen the movie Cats, but, you know, it's just it's stuff that I can kind of go a little bit awry sometimes, and it is because, you know, Thundercats, it's quite a kinky brand, if you ask me. There's something quite, you know...
I mean, it combines S&M and furries all in one.
There you go. Thank you for cutting through red tape there, Ted, and that one. Thank you. But yeah, you can see what I mean. They're quite, you know, they're quite 80s characters. And I often wonder, you know, how do millennials think about these characters? I mean, I often wonder that. You know, I often see, like, someone came in now to, we moved apartment, someone came into my place and it's like, oh, do you know Skeletor? And all they know is Skeletor is from a meme. But then I showed them then, like, my sideshow or my Tweeterhead statue of Skeletor, my sideshow Tweeterhead statue. And it's like, oh, no, here's Skeletor. Here's another version of Skeletor. And I showed them my lovely Mondo Skeletor. And like, oh, right, that's what he looks like. Yeah, he's... And so, but it's funny. And I'm just... Thundercats is kind of even more down that kind of retro... God, that is very 80s line. Again, with the kind of big hairdos and stuff like that. Design-wise, did you feel... Was there any kind of... worry on that size that, you know, are you strictly catering to these 80s fans? Is that what you're going for here?
No, you hit the nail on the head there. When there's a very specific edict and a very specific customer in mind when we're pursuing these lines. The thing I always tell the team is we want to create the collectible, the figure, so it feels and looks like what you imagined it was when you looked at the packaging in the store when you were a kid. Mm-hmm. And, you know, like an upscale version of that, that's also partially why 1/6, because, you know, your physical proportions have changed. How do you scale the toy up to match that physical, that physical change in the human being? But also, you know, is this the toy you imagined you had? Or at least, and that's just coming from my own experience. I was a G.I. Joe kid.
Mm.
And, you know, the packaging art on the G.I. Joes, also masked, was way cooler than the actual toy.
Yeah.
and so it was about how do you trigger that portion of the imagination. Mm. And, you know, I've wanted to do Thundercats for a very long time. Because I just felt like it fit within what we were doing within Masters of the Universe. It feels like a natural progression of that, yeah, of that line. If you were into sword and sorcery cartoons in the 1980s, well, the next in line is Thundercats. But yes, there is a lot of challenges in trying to make something that leans into the nostalgia but also creating something new and fresh and a little more artistic and interesting with the character.
Do you guys ever get feedback on, like, say, a Lion-O design or a He-Man design from a millennial, for instance? Are you aware that, you know, like that millennials do respond to these figures? Because I'm genuinely fascinated by this topic, because I saw there was a girl on YouTube, I forget what she's called, but she's a really sweet girl with short hair, and she loves collecting the original Masters of the Universe. She collects Origins, but she's really now dipping into the vintage figures. And it's just hearing how she describes them and how they appeal to her, I find it really refreshing and stuff like that. So I'm just wondering, like, have you... Oh,
absolutely. You know, I'm the old man on the team. Most of the people that work on this are, you know, at least a decade younger.
Right.
So certainly there is input from not just that. There's some people I work with that are in their early 20s, you know, and that's a whole other different take. It's interesting, you know, this is a really heavy subject. It's interesting when you get into those generational properties,
yeah,
of, you know, what resonates with one generation or the other. That was actually the nature of my, you know, which cartoon.
Yeah.
Because, you know, when you can get into this topic with Ninja Turtles, like, everybody has their version of Ninja Turtles.
Yeah.
Because that's one of those IPs that never went away. Right,
same as Transformers.
And just kept getting re-envisioned by new creative individuals.
I love these. I often just wonder what life is left in these 80s characters, and will these characters die with us, and all these kinds of things. And I could get really.
Well, I would say that if you look back at other stuff, I don't know that it'll, you know, it's going to kind of depend on how much of that has gotten carried forward. So I think you're better off with a line like Turtles or with Masters of the Universe or with Thundercats, because you've got more modern versions that drag them back into the older versions, right? They have something they can relate to, and then they follow that trail back. I don't think you have to worry about it dying with you unless it's actually dead.
True that.
You know, I'll give you an example. I can tell you right now, Captain Action is dead, and it's going to die with my generation. And as hard as I know a few friends of mine who keep trying to pull it forward, it isn't a living thing anymore. So it's dead. It's going to die. But something like G.I. Joe, if Hasbro got their act together and can continue to create interesting IP with that, then it will continue to live, because even the old stuff will get that nostalgia from people who start new and they go, oh, wait a minute. Here is all this history. This is really cool.
Yeah,
look at these older things.
That's what I've seen with online with, like, that. Oh, it's hard. Ted, help me out here. Do you know the girl I'm talking about? She's a girl with short hair. She's got glasses, but it's just hearing how young people describe these older characters, I just find infinitely fascinating, because it's like we live in such a little kind of 80s bubble. This stuff really resonates with us. But you put maybe a He-Man or a Lion-O, an old school Lion-O, today, it's like, why is his abs cut out? A He-Man's naked, you know. People.
I've seen it a lot. I've seen it in focus groups where you know, younger audiences, especially kids, look at the designs from the 80s and they don't get it. They just don't get it. They're like, what is this? and they're like, why am I supposed to like this? And it is just an absolute generational thing. I mean, again, we are from an era where there was such a pastiche of different things, you know, vintage 1950s sci-fi or, you know, Robert E. Howard or any of this stuff. And it was all commingling at the same time. So we were much more open to sort of the different, you know, aspects of those elements. I think as the generations, you know, after us came to things, you know, the culture sort of tended to get a little bit more conservative. I think that
it got more conservative. Flesh became covered up.
The characters had to be relatable. You had to see yourself in there. And I think that, you know, you yourself would not be running around in furry underwear even. So I think that there's a lot of, maybe you would. I don't know.
Yeah, that's.
Have you seen my hairdo? Have you seen what sort of clothes I wear?
I think that that's part of it is that, you know, audiences look at their heroes today and they need to see themselves. And when they see a guy running around as even if he's ripped and jacked and awesome, you know, they look at that guy and they're like, why is he naked? You know, and that it just goes back to that. And I think it's just it's a weird sort of generational issue. I don't know. But I do. I remember the girl you're talking about. I saw a YouTube video where she was talking about recently discovering
Yoshi.
Universe and, or it was a TikTok or something like that. Yeah. And she was really cool. And she was so excited about it.
That's just not that.
Well, yeah. There was also like, you know, a content shift. You know, demanded by like Congress.
Yeah,
that occurred to more educational content after, you know, essentially the 1980s, and early on, you know, what came out of the 1980s was also, you know, enacting or doing away with laws that prevented, you know, the targeting of children, essentially in half-hour-long commercials, right? That's why cartoons were always shorter, and why. You know, it's such an interesting psychological thing that happened during that period of time that I don't think we'll ever experience again. Because, you know, shortly after this, you got Barney. You got, you know, way more, I guess, to coin a term, way more Sesame Street type educational content than you got the hyperized ideal versions of heroes.
You're right. And kids and the content itself, the heroes became younger, meaning there weren't really adult heroes in animation. I think that probably ended in the 90s with like the Batman animated series and the X-Men.
Yeah. You see the shift to the teen created content.
The teens and kids heroes.
Even X-Men shifted more towards Jubilee towards the end of this run.
Yeah. Yep. And that, which meant that the content itself didn't age very well. It, like, kids got out of it much quicker and found other content that was much more mature or sophisticated that they were excited about. So there was a big shift, Bob, to your point about making sure that the content was educational, making sure that we were leaning in on that, which meant the characters were younger so that they were more relatable, so that they were learning the lessons in the show, which meant that the content itself did not age very well, so that people were getting out of it earlier, and that's really how we got to this place today. So
I mean, Lino is a perfect example of that. Lino was a kid for like an episode.
Yeah. It's true. The boy becomes
a
man.
And suddenly Lino is a full-grown adult acting like a full-grown adult. And they never really touch on the fact that, you know, he's still
he's
12.
A kid. Right. Yeah. I'll bet you any amount of money, if there is a Thundercats reboot at some point, they will keep him a child. They will keep him like 13 or 14.
Yeah, they will. Well, if they did that in the reboot, didn't they? A little bit, it kind of kept him, had him growing into and stuff like that. Which is, it is bad. And of course, we're hearing that then about the new Master of the Universe movie. Case in point, the new Master of the Universe movie. Oh, we have to have a relatable story. You got to put Adam on Earth, and he's got to be a person that discovers his destiny. And that's just kind of the thing now, isn't it? Where we're growing up, it was you know, there's a guy when we aspire to be that guy. Boom, John, done. You know. Also, think we got more prudish as well. When that happened, we got a little bit more prudish, like flesh. You know, I guess when Thundercats and He-Man was out, bodybuilding was still a big thing. Body was still on this flesh, and Stallone and Schwarzenegger and Van Damme, they were oiled up to the hilts. And that became instantly uncool overnight once Die Hard came out. I blame it all on Die Hard. Let's blame it all on Die Hard.
Yeah, it's all Bruce's fault.
It's all Bruce Willis's fault, making it a regular guy, a regular shirt. But we're running out of time now, folks, so we're up to our hour hit now. But I am sat here now, and we're gonna flatter Bob a little bit too much here now, but I'm sat here now in front of my two glass details that I got at IKEA, which I had to travel for, and I had to specially get them for my display, because they don't make IKEA details anymore, and they make these other things called the blalad, whatever it's called. I hate it. But I went and got myself two secondhand details.
Yeah, the name is much harder than Detolf.
It is. It's called a Blaladin or something. And it's smaller and it's narrower and you can only fit about two figures in there. Whereas on this now, I've got He-Man and Battle Cat on one Detolf. I got Skeletor and Panther on the other Detolf. I got Beastman, Merman, Trapjaw another, Prince Adam, Man-at-Arms, She-Ra another, Scarecrow, Faker, Keldor, two Hordax, my two B-Masters. I think I could go on. I've also got my He-Man, because we had a little thing with the He-Man, so we were able to make a double body, which worked out really well for everybody, because we now have a Thunder Punch He-Man extra because of the extra body thing. Yay! That worked out well. And it's just...
Welcome.
Yeah. And I'm just looking at my collection, and I'm just... This is a year later now, specifically. I mean, this is you now, Ted, because we were here a year ago chomping at the bit for Battle Cat. Chomping at the bit for Battle Cat. And now we've had Panther and
Panther and a big horse on the way.
And a horse and a sky sled. A sky sled, dude, we're getting a sky sled. You know.
Yeah, Sky Slant. Sky Slant was an internal passion project.
Yeah.
And you got to give your guys those. You got to give your guys, you know, that's Emiliano was a big push for us doing Sky Slant. I'm actually quite pleased with how
it. Oh, it looks wonderful. Pierre did a lovely job on the sculpt of that as well. He did a lovely, lovely job on that. Now, of course, that begs the question. I mean, is it totally far-fetched to think we'll get the rest of the battle ram, the back section? But again, how would you sell that? Oh, we're going to sell you the back of the truck. That's it. It's just like selling Optimus Prime's truck on itself.
Yeah, we get these kind of questions all the time. And is it out of the question? No, but... You know, in that same voice, no one's real happy about having to give $1,500 for something like that. Yeah. Eventually, you know, ultimately, why is it so expensive? Because if it's not that price, it doesn't exist.
Exactly. Exactly. I think people,
ask us for Grayskull all the time, and it's like, well.
Yeah, that's not going to happen. Come on.
No, it better.
It's a used car.
I'd say it better, but I think to your point, Bob. I think there's a disconnect in terms of who the collector actually is, because people who collect statues, $1,500 for a statue, they don't think twice about it.
Yeah, no problem.
But it's a toy, and I think that there is I can't spend $1,500 on a toy, and it's like, well, I don't look at it as a toy. I look at it as an articulated statue. So that to me is like, oh, I'm going to put that on a shelf. It's going to be lit. It's going to have its own thing, and that's how I see that. So I know I don't have that issue, but I do know that people who don't collect, you know, statues, they look at this as a toy. And I think that they make the exception because it's Masters of the Universe. They'll buy it in a 1/6 scale, but it's still a toy to them. And I think that that's where the price sort of like grinds the gears.
Yeah, grinds the gears. It really grinds my gears. Well, there you go. We better turn off. Mike, did you have any more things you want to say to Bob before we let him go away? You two old guys.
Yeah, well, Bob just needs to make some more of those animated figures from the Batman series. That's all I got to say, man.
That's all. That's
whatever you make. I don't care if it's like Condiment King. I don't care. Just keep making them and I'll keep buying them.
I'll do my best, Mike. Condiment King. You want his likeness to be similar to yours?
that would be a good selling point.
Will I have to pay you a percentage?
Mm-hmm. Indeed, well, it's been absolutely a joy having you on, Bob. There's a lovely insights there today, because it's just these figures are glorious. You do realize how happy you're making us here with all this stuff, right?
Yes, yes, and that's the goal. That's the end goal for me. Is, you know, I want to, you know, bring some kind of spark of joy and nostalgia and happiness.
Because you know what,
in the product we're releasing, if that's not in the product, I'm not interested.
Exactly. Because it's just, you know, we obviously there's something very rewarding in buying a small little action figure as well on occasion, but you know, when you get a Mondo in the post and you open up, oh, the new toy smells like all the new parts, it's just a whole ritual, man, when you get a lovely Mondo figure in the post. I find it's just, I can't wait. But we've got, so Tila's about to drop any moment now. So Tila's on boats and stuff like that. So we'll hopefully be getting Tila now this week. Because I think...
Tila should be shipping within the next 30 days to almost everybody that ordered Tila. There's a few that, you know, I have to go through a strange route, which is just internal operation stuff. MacReady is now going to be released out of the world. Super excited to see how that's going to be received. And... you know, we've got a couple of interesting pre-orders coming up. You know,
excellent. We've got
Y&O this Tuesday. Hopefully everybody's in love with that figure.
Lovely, lovely.
I don't know when you're announcing the podcast, so it may not be this Tuesday.
I'll have the podcast up later this evening.
Okay.
Well, actually, no. Well, pending your approval, of course, I'll send it on to you and do our approval thing first, and then we'll get up maybe tomorrow, next 24 hours, or as soon as we can, really. But yeah, it'll be up pretty fast. It is, because there's no wedding, because no one cursed, you see. So there's no cursing, so we can just.
Yeah, that was a miracle for me.
But, yeah, it's, trust me, I'm Irish. I know. But there you go, ladies and gentlemen. Bob Fulkerson from Mondo, thank you so much.
You're welcome.
Please continue the good work, you, Hector. All the design team, the sculptors. You got Mae Tamatarana doing your sculpting. That boy's a legend. He sculpts some of my favorite figures for us. For like Mae, what I love about Mae sculpting is Mae respects the art. Mae respects the design art. He looks at the design art and say, "I like that, and yes, I'm going to reproduce that." He loves that. Not every sculptor does. You know, not to think, but some sculptors obviously did, you know, they went and did their own thing, and that's cool. That's fine. But what I love about Mae Tabatran, he looks at the design art and he replicates it and he'll push it and whatever he needs to do with it. I love that kind of sculptor. I love working with those kinds of sculptors. And of course, you got Emiliano Centelo, so you're bringing in the whole stuff. We haven't touched on the 1/12th line of Masters of the Universe, but this is a 1/6 scale podcast, ladies and gentlemen. Other podcasts will do the 1/12th, but it is very exciting, Bob. You guys must be stoked. And of course, Emiliano being heavily involved with the 2000X cartoon. Our comic books and all that whole year of Mass Universe. I mean, that's just a goal. It's just, you know.
Yeah, super, super excited. That's actually my favorite animated series.
Yeah, same here. It's beautiful to watch.
Okay, I'm right here.
I know you are. I was going to give you bad props on season 4 of Umbrella Academy. really loving that. I have 2 more episodes left. Well done. Oh, well done.
Call me after.
This podcast will now be buried. Sorry, Ted. I really like the 2001 series. If you look at our line, you can tell.
Well, once again, thank you so much, Bob. Ted Biaselli.
Yes, sir.
Thanks for joining me today, and thanks for getting on at such short notice as well, kind of thing. I love that. And, you know, we're bring on season 3, man. I want to see what Despara does with this He-Man that she says, you know. Well, one question. Will the voice actress who's playing Despara potentially be the same voice actress? Would she be carried over to a third season?
All things will be considered.
All things will be considered. I mean, because I'd love Teresa Heffler to voice
behind the mask. Some people sound different behind a mask than they do when they take the mask off.
Ah, yes, of course. That's true. Yes, and she did have a little bit of a reverb on her voice as well.
Mm.
So there you go. But Ted, you know, we're looking forward to Wednesday season two. We're looking forward to Avatar season 2. I've got to start watching the final season of Umbrella Academy. And what else have we got? We got One Piece.
One Piece is coming. We're in the middle of production in South Africa right now.
Yes.
It's amazing. We got big announcements for cast coming up. It's going to be fun.
Excellent stuff. And hopefully season 3 of Masters of the Universe. Annihilation. What else would it become? Annihilation. Reunions. Masters of the Universe. Reunions. I don't know. I could babble on for ages. Thank you so much, Ted, for coming on. Michael Crawford, my usual co-host and buddy of action here. Thank you so much for joining. And that was incredibly late noise you coming on there. Also, thank you so much indeed for that.
No problem.
Thank you very much for joining us today, ladies and gentlemen. If there's a topic you feel we should be covering, by all means, let us know. Get on to Mondo.com, MondoTees.com. Get in your pre-orders. Lino's going up when, Bob? Wednesday, you said?
Tuesday
for Lino. Get on Lino. He looks absolutely amazing. The thing is for Skimmer, we've got... loved a lovely new version of Rogue out. So anyone who missed the first Rogue, I would argue this one is even slightly nicer because she's slightly got metallic sheen to her onesie as well, her more little jumpsuit that she's got. So I'm really excited for that. But there you go. You can email me at namenart.com. Catch everyone else. MWTToys.com is up for all reviews. Mike Crawford always reviews lots of Mondos on his website with lovely photographs to get on there as well. And that's it. That's all I can say. Like all good action figures, do hand yourself a care, listeners. Once again, Bob Fulkerson, thank you so much for joining us on this show.
Thank you all.
See you. Good night,
friends.
Good night, ladies and gentlemen. Good night.